Thank you for plugging into this Family Life News podcast, streaming issues-driven, family-focused news.
I think you touched on a really important word there, and that's disruption. I think we're all experiencing that in some capacity, and especially as we come into the house and maybe we have a completely different work environment now, maybe a different work schedule. The kids are home too, and they're trying to get into some type of routine. And as you mentioned, I think a lot of us, we tend to marry our opposite. So then you've got polar opposite personalities then trying to live in close quarters 24/7 too. So how do you navigate those disruptions or those changes to where you don't get completely stressed out?
Well, I would say that the first week, probably neither of us did it. My husband and I, we did not do a great job at it. We were constantly interrupting each other. We were short with each other. The whole thing just so took us by surprise that we weren't prepared. So now we've had a little bit of time to think about it, a little bit of time to process through. And probably the ways that we responded are not dissimilar to the way many people do when you're in an emotional pressure cooker, right? Because there's this confined space thing with no clear end date. But then there's also the horror of this virus that's just taking over the world and none of us knowing, are we going to be okay? So pressure is high. And in those kind of situations, I think one of the most common things is that we try to self-medicate. We overeat. And if you look at social media, you know, the number of posts of people baking and eating cakes and cookies, and the fact that when I went shopping after the first week of the shelter in place, all the baking goods were completely gone. There was nothing left. And same with chips, nothing. Absolutely no chips. So I think that people are self-medicating with food, with TV, with alcohol. I think retreating or withdrawing, that tends to be my go-to. You know, just leave me alone. I can't deal with this. It's too overwhelming to me. So I just kind of retreat and shut down rather than being able to be present to my feelings. Then there's the possibility of moralizing and shaming. When somebody does something differently than how you would like it done, there can be a lot of moral energy, criticism, and that sort of thing. Lashing out. There was a really important article in the New York, I think it was the New York Times last week, that talked about domestic abuse and how in this season it's really dangerous for people who are in that situation because there's no break. Nobody's going off to work. The kids aren't going off to school, and so the pressure builds. So obviously paying attention to that dynamic, whether it's in your church community or friendship circles, I think is going to be important for us. And then I think the last one, which is also probably one that I default to far more than I wish, is micromanaging, you know, trying to control people and control the situations. Obviously, when life feels out of control, one of the things that we just try to do is to control. And the thing we should be doing is just trying to control ourselves. But it's often easier to try, or we think it's easier to try to control other people.
We didn't even touch on the financial aspects of things.
Right.
With some people, you know, losing their jobs or maybe their hours are cut down, that sort of thing, too. That can add a lot of strain on a marriage, on a relationship, on a family as well.
Yes, because nobody knows. So when this all comes to a close, whenever it comes to a close, is my job going to be available to me or is the company going to be closed down? Our son actually just got laid off this week. He works for Rover, which is that dog walking company. So they have uniquely been hit by this because nobody needs a dog walker because everybody's home. So people in small businesses, waiters and waitresses, like there's just so many people we know who have been laid off. And yes, who knows what's going to happen in 2 or 3 months. So total pressure cooker.
What are some of those better options to replace maybe the bad behaviors that we've been kind of admitting here the last couple of weeks?
One of the things that's always been helpful in our marriage is that we own when we've made mistakes and apologize quickly rather than just ignoring our bad behaviors, to be able to own, hey, I was just really in a difficult space last night and I'm so sorry for the ways that I was impatient with you. That sort of quick admission of fault, I think, works wonders in terms of keeping the grace flowing between couples. And that's, I think, another issue is that we really have to be aware of the fact that we're all in this together. This isn't just a one person who's uniquely being affected. Like, we're all being affected. So if we can keep that in mind and up the empathy quotient and up the grace quotient, again, identifying with the struggles that we're having rather than dismissing them or moralizing, I think is super helpful. One of the other things that we have been having here in our household are honest conversations about what we need. So after that first disastrous week where I felt like I was being interrupted just all the time, we sort of established different places in the house where, okay, this is where you're going to work, and Christopher and I are actually on the opposite ends of the house, which that helps to mitigate some of the interruptions that I feel just because what he does is tends to be loud. And then today, when I woke up this morning, I thought, you know, I'm going to make little signs for every one of our doors that says available or not available, because when we're home, we need to be interacting with each other on various things, like, do you want to eat dinner together tonight? But it's hard to know who's working, who's in the middle of a Zoom call, et cetera. So specific conversations, real clarity about boundaries, and then choosing to respect each other's boundaries, I think is a big deal, too, is to not dismiss them or think that what you need is more important than what somebody else needs. And that can tend to be true for us as parents, is that we feel like our needs, the things that we have to accomplish work-wise, are going to be more important than what the kids are dealing with. And they are uniquely stressed, and they have had so many losses. Anybody who's in high school, right, the ending of the sports season, any events that they were hoping to contribute to or participate in, the final production of the year, graduation, like, there's a lot of losses. So if we can really be kind and empathetic to each other and maybe even help our kids figure out what does it look like to grieve? How do you face disappointments well and not turn against other people or turn against yourself or turn against God? Because my guess is that there will be some kids for whom this raises some spiritual issues, which gives us the unique opportunity to talk about what do we do when we're disappointed? How do we manage that? And how do we stay close to each other and God? And then maybe the last thing is just whenever possible, which I realize it isn't even an option for some people, but Christopher and I are going for long walks, trying to get a couple game-playing things happening once or twice a week, just so we can push off from the intensity of what we're dealing with and try to remember why we like each other.
We've been speaking with author Dorothy Greco. Thank you so much, Dorothy. A lot of great stuff in here. We really do appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me on, and stay well, everybody.